AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. And by propane. Propane is the energy for everyone, especially farmers. Environmentally friendly propane can fuel most anything on the farm. See how at propane.com. A bit of a rally in wheat futures was not much of a surprise, and a close in corn futures below the bottom of the sideways trading range honestly was kind of easy to anticipate. But the contract low close in bean futures, I'm surprised by that one. Live cattle were slightly higher, while feeders posted another big daily gain. Hogs were mixed.
Live from beneath glowering skies via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This afternoon, we chat with Don Close from Terrain Ag. I'm the handsome newsman, Davis Michelson, and now the host of AgriTalk, Jeff Lurie.
All right, Davis. Yeah, it's been a while since we've had a conversation with Mr. Close from Terrain Ag. I'm looking forward to it, dude.
Absolutely. It's going to be great.
Good. Yes. Rainy conditions down your way? Is that what I'm hearing?
You know, we're beneath glowering skies. It just sort of feels like the atmosphere has given us the stink eye down here.
Yeah.
You know, not a lot going on. 49 degrees and overcast, and it just looks a little suspect. You know,
yeah.
I don't think we're going to get much sun today.
Yeah, 48 degrees and sprinkling all day. Every now and then the wind blows.
Yep. Same here.
it's kind of a mid-April day, I guess, in here in the Midwest. So.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Checks out.
Yep, that's right. Welcome to AgriTalk. Glad that you are joining us today. We're going to spend some time talking about the protein markets. Have not had a conversation with Don for a while, and as I said, really, really looking forward to that here today. Bit of a break for action in the middle of the Corn Belt, isn't there? Guys got after it over the weekend, Saturday in particular, and really put a bunch of corn and soybeans in the ground. But since that rain started falling late Saturday and into early on Monday, it's been a slowdown kind of week for us.
Yep. Well, and last week, so we left from KC, headed for Central Iowa Friday morning. And really, we didn't see anything going until we got north of the Missouri border, and then it wasn't even much at all. I mean, not even tillage or field work, nobody out. I think we saw three along, and this is along the interstate, you know, so what are you going to do?
Yep.
I was surprised.
Well, in the crop progress report that we got on Monday, which was as of Sunday, Missouri corn plantings are coming right in there. I think they're at a record pace.
That's probably just Farmer Bob got out there and got all his acres put in.
Well, you know Farmer Bob.
Yeah, he's bending the state average is what he's doing.
That's right. You know, and once he gets rolling, everybody else kind of figures, geez, it's time to get rolling. Farmer Bob's
going, I got to go.
I got to go. All right. Hey, Davis, let's go ahead and get to the news. What do you got?
Well, Chip, the weekly export sales report for the weekend at April 11 featured net old crop sales cancellations of nearly 94,000 metric tons. A slow sales week was more than offset by canceled wheat sales of 124,000 metric tons to China. Sales for the 24-25 marketing year totaled 222,000 metric tons, in line with trade expectations. Mexico topped the list of new crop buyers, along with unknown destinations, Japan and Italy. July hard red winter wheat futures opened at near session lows and posted a mid to high range close. But for the first time in 10 sessions, Chip, the contract failed to trade on the plus side of that pivotal 580 level. July HRW wheat futures today 6¼ cents higher, 575¼. July SRW wheat up 0.75 cents to 553. July spring wheat closed at 643. That's up 3¾ cents, Chip.
It seems strange to say it with the higher closes that were posted today, but today's the first time in 10 sessions that we can't get the July HRW above 580 to trade.
No.
So it feels like the momentum is coming out of the wheat market again. And on a day when we get confirmation of more wheat cancellations by China,
I guess
that's no big surprise that we would see that the downside momentum kind of build even on an up day. I know it seems weird, but it was not a good day for the wheat market.
Well, July corn futures gapped lower, firmed to fill the gap, and then dropped through support at the 440 level. Today's close below that level was the first since March 27, and it matched the close on March 1st. Support at current levels is very thin. Chart watchers are targeting the February 26 low at 422 and one quarter. Export sales of corn weekended April 11 totaled 501,000 metric tons, in line with trade expectations. But, Chip, that was down 45% from the four-week average. Rain in the Midwest is not threatening long-term corn planting delays and is improving yield prospects in the center and western areas of the Corn Belt. May corn futures 3 1/2 cents lower today, 426 and three quarters. July corn down 4 3/4 cents, 436 and one quarter. December corn futures closed at 460, down 4 3/4.
It's that time of the year where, you know, we'd like to be out in the field and getting some progress made, and any delay you would think might be a little price supportive in here, but with as dry as it has been and the beneficial rains that we've received in those dry areas, right here in Northeast Iowa being one of those where it's still raining right now, you know, it's hard to deny the pressure on the corn market.
Well, Midwest rains pulled bean prices lower today. Soybean export sales weekended April 11, nearly 486,000 metric tons, in line with trade expectations and more than 60% ahead of the four-week average.
Wow.
USDA this morning also announced the sale of 138,000 metric tons of U.S. soybean meal to the Philippines. That demand is welcome, but it did nothing to support bean prices. July bean futures opened at near session highs and closed near session lows. July beans have support at the February 29 low of 1140 and one half, but today's close was the first below support at 1150. May beans were 15 and one quarter cents lower today, 1134 and a quarter. July beans down 15 and one quarter to 1149. November beans closed at 1149 and a quarter, down 12 cents. Man, who left the magnet at 1149, Chip?
Yeah, no doubt. It's that first close under 1150 in the July contract is not good news. It suggests that the funds who are short in the bean market are going to stay comfortable on the short side of the market, and any kind of a rally, they're going to step in with more selling to defend it.
Cotton export sales in the weekend of April 11 of 146,000 running bales, 64% of the four-week average sales. Still, the charts kept sellers in charge of the cotton market. July cotton today, 72 points lower, 80.61. There we go, Chip, some super decent demand news, 64% of the head of the four-week average. Bro, when do we see, you know, six-figure running bales here in export sales for cotton?
Well, yeah, it's good news for the cotton market, but the technical side of cotton has just gotten so negative, and the momentum is heavily to the downside right now.
Well, beef export sales of 17,700 metric tons was up nearly 30% from the four-week average. June live cattle a nickel higher today, 175.37 and one half. October futures up a dollar, 176.72 and a half, and May feeders $2.27 and one half higher on the day at 242.55. And on the snout side, pork export sales of 21,800 metric tons were down by nearly half from the four-week average. Mexico, the top buyer. May hogs, 20 cents lower, 94.72 and a half. June, 2 1/2 cents lower, 102.70. Chip.
All right, Davis, yeah. This cattle trade, boy, look at the difference between the Fed cattle market and the feeder cattle market in today's futures action. It's telling us a lot about where the concerns are on both sides. On the supply side of the market, where are the cattle going to come from? On the live cattle side or the fed cattle side, it's expressing a little bit of concern about demand. Are we going to be able to maintain demand for beef going forward in this environment? We'll find out from Don Close, Terrain Ag, next.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farmincentive to see if you're eligible.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
The chickens have come home to roost. Find out whose fence they're perched on today on AgriTalk. Let me just come wheeling in the top of my Norelco razor here and between the pine trees down the snowbank and whatnot. That's what I'm doing today.
Is that what
Welcome
you're doing today?
To AgriTalk. You betcha. Why
gotcha.
Not?
Uh-huh. Gotcha. I don't know. Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Chip. Glad that you are with us. Corn was lower. Sharp. I'll call it sharp losses in soybean meal today. We had wheat made its way to the upside. Slightly higher trade in most of the cattle contracts. Feeder cattle solidly higher. And lean hog futures were mixed in today's trade. Don Close is the Chief Research and Analytics Officer at Terrain Ag, and he joins us right now. Don, it has been too long. How are you?
I agree with that. I'm doing good, and you?
Yeah, I'm doing real fine, real fine. You staying out of trouble?
Well, I'm doing the best I can.
Well, good, 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 good. What do you see out there in the world of the proteins that you really like right now? Let's start with that general question.
Well, I think the operative word there is just the volatility that we're dealing with. I don't see that going away anytime soon.
Okay. All right. You know, and volatility, it gets kind of a bad rap from time to time, but volatility, a lot of times, if you don't have any volatility, you don't have any opportunity. So with the opportunities that we've got in front of us, we're going to try to figure out how to best take advantage of them. Let's start in the hog trade, okay? Right. And go back to that March hogs and pigs report for the supply side indicators. Was there anything that you saw in that report that really caught your attention?
Well, I think the two big takeaways for us was we're continuing to see a drawdown on that breeding herd and think that will eventually lead us to a turnaround. The backside of that is just that pigs saved per liter number is simply amazing.
Yeah.
How efficient those guys have become.
Yeah. Yeah. Every time we see a cutback in the in farrowings, it's not just offset, it's more than offset.
Yes.
By the number of pigs per liter and the efficiency in the farrowing house is something that you and I have been watching for a long time. Now, PEDV got in the way of progress for a while, but I don't know what's got us on the latest push on efficiency, but it's certainly there, isn't it?
You know, I think there's a lot of things going on there, but I think just the necessity is the mother of invention. And when economics have been as difficult as they've been on that side of the aisle, that those guys are doing everything they can do to keep those pigs alive.
Yeah. You know, it was at least a pig ago that I was thinking to myself, well, the number can't get much higher than what it is right now. We're not going to get much over 10 pigs per litter on this thing. But here we are over 11 pigs per litter. And we seem to have momentum on the side of efficiency here. So it's hard to ask the question if that's going to continue, but I will ask the question, will we continue with lower farrowings?
Well, I think the answer to both is yes. The years that you and I would have both spent at trying to achieve that 10 pigs per litter number, and that we finally, after we've gotten there, we just seem to be accelerating. I don't see anything that's going to turn that number around.
Man.
It might slow down, but I think it'll continue to get bigger. So as a result of that, yeah, I think the sow numbers will continue to see some contraction.
Okay. That that leaves us vulnerable, doesn't it, Don? That's my thought, is when you're relying on this big number of pigs per litter to feed into the market hog supply, any kind of a disruption like we saw from PEDV is a real serious disruption, because you're not going to be able to make up for it with increased farrowings in any short period of time.
I would have a difficult time arguing that position. I don't know that of all the challenges in that complex right now, that's at the top of my list for things I'm going to worry about. But you do make a great point.
What is at the top of that list? Let's go down that path.
That avenue, you know, the concern that we see is just consumer behavior, the softness, certainly on domestic pork demand. I think there's some palatability concerns there, and that's just a tough item to turn around. So that would be our number one concern for the longer term. Certainly the offset to that, and where I know you want to go with the conversation, but the export side, while we're seeing a slowdown, specifically China, but Southeast Asia, Mexico, the opportunity for growth, and Central America, still a very positive story.
Yeah, absolutely. The palatability concern that you've got, you know, you look back at what the beef industry was coming out of the 80s, and it was all about lean beef. And now all of a sudden we find out that consumers want good beef and choice beef and prime beef. Am I hearing you say that we've gone too far on the lean side on pork?
Precisely what I'm saying. And you're, again, if you look at that recovery in beef quality grading, you know, that's now been a 30-year quest since we had the first of the beef quality audit. Clearly, the message from that research was that we've got to make that product better. And so now, say 25, 30 years later, we've seen a 30 to 35% increase in the percentage of carcasses weighing, or percentage of carcasses grading choice and prime. Mm-hmm. That is an amazing story.
Yeah, it certainly is. I see the anecdotal evidence of what you're talking about because of some of the niche pork products that are being produced out there and the quality reviews and raves that are on some of that niche pork. But outside of that, is there any real strong consumer study or evidence that you're pointing at when you say that pork has gotten too lean?
We haven't done the consumer side of it. We would largely be working in anecdotal evidence like yourself on that side. Where we have done work on that is we're doing a couple of totally independent studies and looking at the demand structure, both of volume of protein by species, but we're looking at total consumer expenditures by species. And as we run those comparisons on a net dollar value, that's really where we see that demand difference showing up.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. Is there a momentum in the industry, Don, to start to make some changes on genetic side?
I'm going to say yes, there is. And okay. As I've been out working with farm credit customers, doing meetings throughout the winter and spring, I clearly, when I talk with producers, there is awareness that there is a palatability problem, a consumer demand problem, and so are they to a point that they have a strategy in place to fix it? I think that might be a little ahead of us, but that simply that acknowledgement there that there are concerns, I'm seeing way more discussions along those lines than I've seen to this point in time.
Gotcha. Okay. Only got about a minute left in this segment, but I want to get this in before we get to the break. Have you noticed any influence or disruption from Prop 12 in overall demand?
Overall demand, yes. Clearly, has there been disruption in demand and product flows in California? Absolutely so. And along with that, we've seen some very substantial increases in price per pound on retail items of, you know, we're talking $1 to $2 a pound on some of those items that has been detrimental to demand in California.
Okay. All right. You know, that is one of the markets that obviously 15% of the pork demand in the country that we don't want to see much of a disruption there. And I think it's a market that does take quite a fair amount of lean pork and lean pork cuts, right?
Absolutely true.
Yeah. All right, man, that went by really fast. Good grief. We are in the middle of a conversation with Don Close, Chief Research and Analytics Officer at Terrain Ag. We got to stay on hogs for just a bit. When we come back, I want to talk about Chinese hog production and if U.S. pork can get back into China in any kind of significant way. Then it's time to move on to cattle. We'll do that with Don next.
Let's go to the markets page at ProFarmer.com and check today's closes, where July HRW wheat futures were 6¼ cents higher at 575¼. July SRW wheat up 0.75 cents to 553. May corn futures 3½ cents lower on the day, 426¾. December corn futures closed at 460. That's down 4¾ cents. May soybeans 15¼ cents lower, 1134 at a quarter. Novi beans closed at 1149¼. That's down 12 cents even. July cotton today 72 points lower, 80.61. On your livestock, June fat cattle a nickel higher, 175.37½. May feeders 227½ higher at 242.55. June lean hogs 2½ cents lower at 102.70. Go to tryprofarmer.com.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now, you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farm incentive to see if you're eligible.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. We've cleared the schedule for you. Give us a call at 855-482-5524 and join the conversation.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Chip. We are in the middle of a conversation with Don Close, Chief Research and Analytics Officer at Terrain Ag. Let's talk about exports, Don. Mexico, still very much a bright spot for U.S. pork exports. Can the industry rely on that demand going forward?
Yes.
Okay.
And yes. That appetite for pork, the broadening number of cuts that they are, you know, it started off as primarily a ham trade.
Right.
And now we're seeing more and more of the carcass. I think that is a bright spot in that market that is assured to stay with us a while.
Okay. Well, our pork exports to China were a very bright spot 2 years ago. We have fallen off significantly since then. Does U.S. pork have a chance of getting back into China's in a big way anytime soon?
I think to get pork back into China is a yes. To anticipate to be back where we were a couple of years ago, I don't think that's in the cards. And the reason that I say that is if you look at the restructuring and modernization of that China hog industry that came as a result of African swine fever, we're now seeing the output of that more efficient, more commercial production. And that in turn has created an oversupply of pork domestically, and it's changed up, you know, made them much more efficient on feed rations, how they're putting components, feed components together. I just think it's been a game changer that we will see continue.
Okay. How good is China at raising hogs right now?
Well, I don't know how to. I'll answer much better than they were.
Okay,
that's far short of giving an endorsement that they're good. It's just they're much better than they were.
Okay. Yep. No, that's the kind of perspective that I was looking for on that question. So it. I think that's it's important to understand that they're much better, but there's room for improvement down the road, isn't there?
Absolutely true.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Let's bust over to the cattle side of things here, because when I look at the way that the market, and today's markets are a great example, but I look at the way that the markets are trading between live cattle and feeder cattle, makes me think that there's a feeder cattle hole coming in the not so distant future. Did we pull calves forward, Don?
To an extent, we have. Now, you know, if you'll think back, weather in January was so rotten. Yep. That neither the sellers nor buyers, there were a lot of cattle that were scheduled for trade in January that just didn't happen. So a lot of the increase in feeder cattle movement that we saw in February, it wasn't so much new sales as it was catching up on the January sales.
Okay. So supplies are tight. Are they going to be at a point here is there upside potential in the feeder cattle market? I guess that'd be the best way to ask it, because that's going to tell us what you think about total supplies coming down the road. Is there upside potential in the feeder cattle market?
Of everything we have talked about today, I can answer with the highest level of confidence that supply is every bit as tight as you're suggesting.
Okay.
And that, yes, we expect to see price improvement. You know, keep in mind that cattle availability of cattle outside of feed yards in the January inventory report were down 4.2%, but that was 680,000 head of cattle. Now, and when we add to that, heifers as a percentage of cattle on feed in January was right at 40%. We've got to pull that percentage of heifers down to 36% or less to mathematically have a female supply to expand.
Okay.
If we add those, have to replace the heifers, percentage of heifers on feed with steers to retain those females for expansion, we're talking almost another 400,000 cattle. So now we've got a supply of cattle outside of feed yards that's better than a million head below where we were a year ago. That's 10% of the cattle on feed. So, yeah, we've got a massive shortage coming at us.
Yeah. Holy smokes. Okay. And I think, you know, the supply side of this market has been well documented for quite some time. I think it's well understood. What is not understood is when the rebuilding might get started, or if the rebuilding gets started. What are your thoughts?
My thoughts on that is absolutely it will take place. When you put the size of the economic carrot in front of the market that's coming, will there be producers who respond to that? Yes, I believe that's true.
Okay.
Are we seeing that heifer retention today? No. And as we, again, as we talk with Farm Credit customers and get their input, I think as an industry and certainly the analytic community, we didn't fully factor or realize the level of economic stress that cow-calf sector was in. And when I talk with the guys that are certainly in positions to be rebuilding female populations, whether that's with buying outside cows or developing heifers, but the answer I so often get is they're just restoring equity to be in a much more comfortable position to expand when they elect to do so.
Okay. Which brings me to this question, because I'm thinking about a 6-weight calf being worth a $2,000 bill.
Yes.
What will the market look like when there is economic incentive in place to rebuild the herd?
To see a calf, you know, let's just say a 4 to 5 weight calf at that $4 level before this is done, it's entirely possible.
I mean, you just run them off the cow and put a $2,000 price tag on them, right?
You know what? Isn't that crazy? You know, the other thing that I would really emphasize with this part of the conversation is,
yeah,
Chip, this market is not so bullish on where we could go with prices in the short term. This market is bullish in a structure that, because of just how empty the shelves are on replacement cows, on replacement heifers, this market's going to continue for the next 2 or 3 years.
Yeah.
So it's got a long runway.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm with you. What kind of influence is the beef on dairy genetics having on all of this? Is it any influence at all on how the beef market is going to trade?
Oh, it's an influence. The beef market, oh, not so much, but the cattle market whole. I would say that, you know, are there attributes to beef on dairy? Unquestionably, there are.
Yeah.
Is it the game? You know, what people often overlook is all cattle end up in the beef supply chain.
Yep.
What we have done with beef on dairy is we're just rearranging when they come to market.
Yeah.
So it does increase beef supply with improved efficiency, improved conversions, what we're doing with live and carcass weights, but it doesn't totally revolutionize that supply.
Yeah.
So, and I would add the timeliness of the beef on dairy, to have a feeder cattle supply when our beef supply chain is so empty, actually a very good thing.
Yeah. I'm with you. Yeah, of course, I'm speaking as a consumer when I say that I'm with you.
All of it supports, you know, it should be to support the consumer. That's where the money comes from. But it also helps those cattle feeders because it enables them to have a supply of cattle to keep those pens full at a time when without them, we would be very short.
Right. And hopefully when everything is said and done with this, the impact on the quality of the steaks, the quality of the roast, the quality of the beef that makes its way to the meat case from those dairy herds is going to be improved. It's going to be higher quality.
It's a higher quality. Now keep in mind the grading characteristics of the dairy base is very strong.
Yeah, we have.
So We're not necessarily improving the quality grade. We are seeing some improvement in yield grade, and we're seeing much better conformity, specifically of those rib and loin cuts that on the straight dairies have that elongated shape to them. So, on eye appeal, it brings a positive attribute to the market.
Yeah, gotcha. Don, we're out of time. I can't believe it. I mean, we didn't spend a whole lot of time talking about the demand side of beef, but it seems darn resilient, doesn't it?
It has been amazing. And the same work that we talked about earlier, and when we were looking at demand comparisons, consumer behavior by species, we're also doing that work between quality grades on the beef side. And the resiliency, consumer loyalty that we're seeing is second to none.
Wow. Wow. That gives me some encouragement going forward on beef demand. Great conversation, Don. Thank you so much. Don Close, Chief Research and Analytics Officer at Terrain Ag.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now, you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farm incentive to see if you're eligible.
In the morning, you're coffeed up and you're thinking. In the afternoon, you've calmed down, but you're still thinking. We're here all day. AgriTalk. Welcome back to AgriTalk, everyone. Your pal, Davis Michelson, here with Chip Flory, as always.
Mm-hmm.
Good conversation just then with Don Close from Terrain Ag. Let's start in the hog house.
Okay.
Here's the recipe that I wrote down. Well, number one, volatility to continue broadly in the protein markets, according to Don. But if we're talking in the hog house, we got increasing pigs per litter. Mm-hmm. The meat is a little bit too lean for the consumer, mm-hmm. and beef consumption is still a competitive factor with pork.
Yeah.
What kind of story are we writing here in the hogs, bro?
It is an interesting story. The efficiency, not only in the farrowing house, but in the finishing house for hogs is pretty remarkable. And the genetic work that has gone into producing the hogs that are producing the pork that is feeding America, bacon, ham, loins, and ribs in a very satisfying way, the efficiency out there is incredible, dude. Then take that efficiency right over to the processing side. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that these carcasses are cookie cutters, but they're dang close in a lot of times. So the consistency of the cut that is coming off these hogs is pretty remarkable. So it's got a lot of the consumer questions answered, but it's that palatability. And as it relates to beef, the comparison is being made more and more often between what consumers have come to expect in their steak of a choice or prime steak, compared to a lean pork chop, the some consumers find that difference very, very stark, and they're looking for something that's a little bit different when it comes to the pork side of things. And it's a question of what you get used to eating. Okay, I'll admit that, because I'm the guy that buys the whole pork loins and cuts it into chops.
Yeah,
cuts it into chops myself. It's how do you not do that? Okay. When you're talking about less than $2 a chop, how do you not do that? But at the same time, I do understand that. And it's because of you know, digging into some of the branded pork products. I think that's the right way to say it. Yes, mm-hmm. It is. The branded pork products that are out there, digging into some of those and just experimenting with it, I am starting to notice a big difference.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
How about you? Mm-hmm. Have you noticed it?
I don't know that I've noticed it so much. And I guess my question would be, you know, you and I are pretty good at cooking chops. Like, we
sure.
know what to do. We know what
yeah.
to do. Is that not the case with most consumers? Because I remember growing up, they're like, don't you dare undercook that pork.
Right.
We're all going to die.
Yeah.
Yeah. Could, it's not like could, it used to be, dude.
Yeah, couldn't overcook it.
Right.
You know, that used to be the attitude.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as the pork loin or my chops or whatever is yeah. approaching 145 degrees, I'm mm-hmm. scrambling like crazy to get them off the grill so that they don't cook too much as they're resting.
Yep. Yep.
You know? The cook that you put on these chops makes a huge difference. There's no question about that.
Resting is definitely the key. Do you notice a temperature change over that rest?
Oh,
I've seen it go up another 5 degrees yet when
yeah.
it's just resting after the cook.
Yeah, you want to take that into account as you're...
Yeah.
You want to take it into account as you're doing the beef, too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't want anything north of 135 on my steaks.
Mm.
So you got to be really careful when you've got them and you're putting that sear on them,
mm-hmm.
that you don't carry too much heat from the grill back to the tinfoil, back to the plate.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah, yeah. It's tough eating well.
It's not easy, is it? You know, and I can help the listeners too. I like my coffee.
Talk
about 135 degrees.
Problems.
Oh,
Jesus.
I know. Right, right.
Yes.
Just remember, I like my coffee about 135 degrees.
Is that 135 on coffee?
Yep. So just do your steaks to the same temperature, and you'll be fine.
I have no idea what I prefer my coffee at.
Yeah.
None whatsoever.
I started asking because I don't like it like super hot. You know, like right away, because I have a tendency to burn my tongue. I'm stupid. You know, I'll just coffee, just pour it in, you know, like a dope. So then so one time I said to the lady, she's making my coffee there, you know, a lot of whipped cream and sprinkles and stuff. I'm like, can you make it not quite so hot? And she goes, well, I could make it about 135 for you. And I'm like, oh, that sounds great. Like I knew what I was talking about. Anytime now I go in and order coffee, you know, well, not anytime, but a lot of times I'll be, let me get a coffee regular. Can you make it 135, please?
135, huh?
Just like my steaks, baby.
I love it.
People are never going to forget the 135 now.
Well, no, you can't forget the 135 after you go through all of that.
That's right.
I didn't know that there was such a... I didn't know that you could order according to temperature on
well,
coffee.
I go to pretty highbrow coffee joints. I
well,
mean,
it sounds like
this ain't
it.
Just, you know, Joe's cup of Joe. Nah.
Sounds like it. National Weather Service 6 to 10 day outlook, April 24th through 28th. We've got above normal temperatures expected over most of the Corn Belt from Chicago westward. Okay? Yeah, Chicago westward.
Yep.
We're looking at above normal temperatures, near normal temperatures in Indiana, Ohio, and Michigan. On the precipitation side, we've got above normal precipitation expected over the entire Corn Belt. Real quick on the 8 to 14 day, above normal temperatures over the entire Corn Belt and above normal precipitation over the entire country.
Wow.
Practically.
Even Alaska.
Even Alaska. Thanks for listening. Come back tomorrow morning. Free for all. Wiesmeyer, Haney, Michelson, and me here on AgriTalk.